Paper Flower Consortium, Episode 17, Loss of Reflection. Recording by Loretta Fabrano Foy, former Lady of the Kingdom of France, current historian and librarian of the Paper Flower Consortium. Welcome back, beloved initiates and other listeners. Tonight, we shall speak of reflections, or specifically, the loss of reflections. Vampires do not reflect light, and therefore cast no reflection. This also means that we are terrible subjects for photographs. And especially people in this modern age used to taking selfies are often shocked that we do not photograph everything. And we must complete our grooming without a mirror. We ask and encourage initiates to stop using mirrors as early as possible during the first year of the program. It can be a true shock to lose your reflection, especially if you are used to wearing cosmetics. In fact, in my own long existence, I was glad I had 6 years to practice without a reflection. Whereas Pascaline relied on Agatha, or me, during her first years as a vampire. Back in Versailles, I remember carefully applying cosmetics to every inch of exposed skin on Agatha, Jacob, or Pascaline to ensure that their entirety was covered, and so no one was shocked by an errant lack of reflection in the Great Hall of Mirrors. But allow me to tell you the story of my vampire daughter, Tabitha, who took the loss of a reflection quite hard. For those of you who do not know, she is the T in Paper Flower Consortium's MYT Clothier. Before I start this story, I shall also give a different kind of warning. Never go unprepared into the mountains, unless you have the experience and gear to make the trip safely. A vampire can survive with the cold. A human will die from hypothermia. The mountains of the Cascades and the Olympics are known to kill, so I cannot stress this warning enough. Tabitha Ford was born an American, but had lived in London when she was a teenager, as her father had moved the family for work. She is a classic beauty by European standards, and always had an interest in fashion. More to meet people than any other reason, she worked as a model. As an adolescent, her mother remained watchful, but Tabitha had quite a bit of freedom, as long as she at least appeared respectful. In Europe, she also devoured the Dracula flicks created by Hammer Films. Her parents moved back to America when she was 20. Though at first she did not plan to return permanently with them, while visiting, she happened to learn that vampires were real from a model friend of hers who worked as an enthralled human in Bellevue. As Bellevue was not seeking initiates at that time, they suggested she visit Seattle. After Tabitha came to us, she claimed she found the men of the coven brooding. Though, at the time, I had no idea why. Honestly, my fifth-born daughter, Marion, is the most brooding of the vampires. And especially back then, as she still worked as a police officer. As for the men, I suppose in the 1960s, Derek was a bit sad. As many people know, after Norma moved out, he suffered from what is commonly called an empty nest. However, he was always very proud of Norma's accomplishments. Jeffrey had begun seeing women at that time period, though he still grieved for his wife and child. Shao was in torpor when Tabitha came. Courtney, though not a man, but at that point in time presented as male, was quite reserved, but they are hardly brooding. Especially not when Charles and the rest are around. Charles and all of his progeny tend to joke constantly, and they have a dry gallows humor common in former soldiers. But hindsight being what it is, I understand Tabitha came to the coven because of her strong sexual attraction to the late actor Christopher Lee, who starred in many of the Dracula films she had seen as an adolescent girl. Unfortunately for her, no vampire in reality can be nearly that fantastic. So when she came here, she saw what she wanted to see. But I don't blame her, because we all do that. Her parents tried to talk her out of a commitment to the coven, though they called it a vampire cult. They were happy that the initiation program kept her close in Seattle. And before I go on, I will say, a diligent daughter, Tabitha visited her parents weekly and considered their well-being and comfort until her father's death, after which she moved her mother into the coven and cared for her most attentively until her mother too left the earthly plane. I can see why they wanted their daughter around. But let's get back to Tabitha's initiation. Her time frame was 4 years. It's a bit longer than common due to her age. Still, she was focused and studious during the program. Tabitha and Mi Young became friends quite quickly. Their shared love of fashion and dressmaking became a successful early business, and they hoped to expand into menswear after Tabitha's transformation. Tabitha could complete her cosmetic and grooming routines without a reflection, yet she wasn't ready to be without a reflection. Some people call this vanity, or that she's conceited, but that's not true. She was just pleased with what she saw when she looked into the mirror. Tabitha was transformed in 1971. As a non-practicing Christian, she felt comfortable enough to accept our prayers, though she felt no need to lead one. I said a prayer for her, and she held my hand and accepted my embrace and the embraces of her future brothers, siblings, and sisters. The transformation itself went well. After her transformation, Tabitha seemed a bit withdrawn, but she did appear at work and was eating well. Mi Young told us Tabitha seemed distracted. At first we thought it was her bloodlust, but she only picked at her food and barely drank. This worried Charles and I, remembering how Walter didn't eat. But Tabitha said nothing was wrong. We did not know that she studied old photos of herself when she was alone, and we did not know that the idea of no more photos frightened her. One night, at work, she pulled a new dress off the rack and tried it on. And then she stared at the empty gown reflected in the mirror. Mi Young, that's what she was doing. Am I empty? Of course not, Mi Young replied. Changing into a vampire is huge, but it never holds to one's expectations, Mi Young said, trying to encourage her sibling. Tabitha nodded and apparently went back to work, but she did not break for lunch. At the end of the night, she told Mi Young she needed a bit of time off. And remembering poor Walter again, I grew a little worried. I feared calling Tabitha's mother if Tabitha failed to thrive. That morning, Tabitha returned to her apartment and changed into a pretty red dinner gown and brushed her long hair in front of the mirror, though of course she could not see herself or her hair. I checked on her, and for 3 days, I watched her grow slack with thirst as she stood in front of her mirror, staring at the gown she was wearing. She cut open her wrist to see if she could see her own blood falling from her body. But of course, she couldn't. When I discovered this, and I told Agatha, Agatha said she had had enough and brought Tabitha a cup of her blood. Agatha said Tabitha's bloodshot eyes followed the reflection of Agatha's skirts in the cup of blood which was reflected into the mirror. And as Agatha grew close, Tabitha leapt on her. A vampire that is a few weeks old is no match for a vampire that is 5 centuries, and Agatha just batted her to the floor. Agatha explained to Tabitha that she could give her final death if she wished it, or she could accept her bloodline progenitor's blood and survive forever. As Tabitha was not suicidal or failing to thrive, she accepted Agatha's blood without complaint or quarrel. And then she explained that something was wrong. There were too many heartbeats around the coven, echoing around her, and it took all her will not to reach out to someone and maybe hurt them. Moreover, though Tabitha could no longer see herself, she felt that everyone was watching her. Maybe everyone was even laughing at her. That she was a fool to think that she could be as fantastical as her version of Dracula, or of Christopher Lee's version of Dracula. We explained that no one was laughing at her, that everyone's transformations were difficult. And she explained how she didn't know who she was anymore. And Agatha told her, "You are a talented fashion designer and fabric artist. These feelings are all natural. And we all went through them." And then she explained her bloodlust. And she said, "None of the stories and warnings you give us about William stops the yearning to reach out and grab a human and expand my fangs into their throat. I don't see how I'm ever going to be safe around an enthralled human." And then Agatha said, "It is natural in the beginning to feel bloodlust, especially when you're not consuming enough." And Agatha gave her another pint of blood. But that night, Tabitha left the coven. Now, I will repeat my earlier warning. Never do this. Tabitha only survived because she is a vampire. Tabitha was not an experienced outdoors woman, but she had many friends who had climbed mountains. And she had heard from her friends that mount climbing can give someone purpose and clarity. So she drove south to Mount Rainier. Not wanting to check in with the ranger station, she parked her car along the state highway and then wandered into the forest. She pushed away boughs of evergreen trees and ferns until she found a trail. She could sometimes see the peak of the mountain, but most often she found herself hoping that she was going in the right direction. She found that she had a slight shadow by the light of the moon, and that at least gave her comfort that she existed. She passed a creek and tried to see her reflection through the water, but all she could see was the rocky creek bed. Tabitha climbed higher in the darkness. Her fur jacket protected her arms, but it was really not made for mountain climbing. The first patches of icy snow crunched underneath her feet. Patches became fields of snow. The snow obscured any landmarks, but at each clearing, Tabitha looked to the stars to find her the direction. Unfortunately, she could not read the stars. The snow grew deeper, and after the first time she sunk to her knees, she picked up a large stick and pushed it into the snow to ensure she did not fall through. The night air sparkled with icy molecules which were blown off glaciers and yearly snow, and this cold stung her skin. Her eyelashes froze. The lengths of her blonde curls froze. Her once pretty dress became bloody tatters. Her fingertips turned blue and then burned with frostbite, but her toes turned black after her shoes cracked open and were eventually discarded. She crossed a slope and found the lowest glacier. She would tell us later how from Seattle, Mount Rainier looks pristine, but the lower glacier looked dirty up close. It is covered with rocks and dirt. It is still beautiful, but quite different than what she expected. And though she had hoped to find some clarity, she felt nothing as she touched the giant piece of ice, which moaned underneath every footfall. A vampire, even one as young as Tabitha, is quite a bit faster than a human. And Tabitha knew that she had hiked for a long time, but she didn't really quite know how far she went. The snow hid that the glacier was pockmarked with fissures and cracks, some small enough just to catch an ankle, but others were large enough that she might actually fall into. She had a passing thought that she might become the abominable snow woman. In the pre-dawn darkness, she watched the world come alive. Marmots chirped. Deer walked around with their young. Higher on the mountain, she saw a bear wander among the snow seeking food. And the idea of food made her stomach growl. She thought she might find a deer herself, or maybe just a mouse. Maybe nothing. She wasn't hungry for food, but she hungered for clarity. So she kept hiking until the sun began to rise. She found a small shelter in the rock and waited for night to come again. And in the shades of these rocks, she asked the mountain to tell her who she was. But she did not find any clarity that morning. She only shivered with cold throughout the day. She left her shelter as early as possible, under thick cloud cover. And she tried to remain close to the trees, but as she went higher, they disappeared. And finally, she found an ice-covered lake. Near the lake was a small building. And curiosity driving her, she went to it. Even before she arrived, she could smell that it was an outhouse. But she peeked inside and found a hole with a wooden seat. She wondered how she was going to find meaning in such a place. Why a mountain knew more meaning than in Seattle itself. But she still walked to the lake and looked through the ice. And that's when she heard human voices. A small group of snowshoers hurried across the lake down the side of the mountain. She heard their fast, nervous heartbeats. And she knew if she pounced on the last one, she might kill him. Yet, though she was famished, she did not feel like killing. She had no need to kill. She could get vampire or human blood back at the coven. And if she completely lost her way, she knew she might find something on the mountain. Carrion. Though she was not finding clarity, she thought she might find understanding in the human's love of the mountain. And realizing she could stalk the hiker's footsteps and they would lead her somewhere, she followed them. Now, to be clear, they were not afraid of her. They did not even know she was there, or at least that's how they acted. They were afraid of something, however. They were afraid of the large dark cloud sliding across the peak. And Tabitha soon saw that that cloud brought more snow. And other than stopping for sips of water or checking their compass, the snowshoers moved fast. Though her feet were in stinging agony, she easily kept up. The snowshoers led down to a visitor center. Now, we think she may have been at Paradise, but it's possible she wandered all the way to Sunrise. Honestly, she doesn't know where she was. But Tabitha was careful not to be seen, as her presence and lack of hiking clothing would not make sense in the setting and most likely cause a scene. She thought someone might even call the authorities. So she remained close to the trees and watched the people, mostly men, but there were a few women and children in the crowd. Someone set down a mug of bouillon on a picnic table. She lopped over to it and then went back into hiding and gulped it as fast as she could. She felt her cracked lips burn. Of course, she didn't know exactly where her car was compared to where she was, but she realized she could follow the road back to the highway until she found her car. That actually took her at least 2 nights. And when she did find her car, she slept in it for an hour. Driving back to the coven was torture on her broken feet and hands, but she made it before another sunrise. 2 enthralled humans, Aldo, who was an old man at that point and nearing 70, and Bernie, who was quite a young man at that point, saw her pull up. Tabitha was barely able to walk, but she declined their assistance. And she asked them not to call Agatha or me. She looked horrible as she re-entered the coven. Bernie simply agreed with Tabitha and bowed at her. But Aldo, he was too old to listen to a young vampire, especially since during his time he had served 4 different vampires. Though he agreed not to call me, he called Derek and Norma on the excuse that Tabitha might need legal assistance and there might be a mess somewhere. Derek, who of course was at the coven, easily caught up to Tabitha since she was moving so slowly. At first, she declined his assistance. As her feet were quite a mess, he offered to at least carry her up the stairs. And then Tabitha said that she didn't want to face her apartment. So Derek invited her to his home. Some people have gossiped that they had a short love affair. While Tabitha admitted she was attracted by his gentlemanly and brooding behavior, Derek is simply not the type of person to seduce someone who obviously needs medical attention. Obviously, I don't know exactly what they spoke about behind closed doors, but Tabitha said inside his apartment, he offered his blood, but without romantic intentions. In fact, he tried to assure her by telling her how he gave his blood to Norma when Norma was an injured girl. And then, even less romantically, he talked about how much he missed his progeny since she had moved out of the coven. And trying to change the subject, Tabitha made the mistake of telling him how his matchstick models were beautiful. His sadness disappeared as he excitedly told her how he painstakingly built them, primarily in a 20-foot to 1-inch scale, though for the newer skyscrapers, he might go even smaller. And then Norma arrived at some point with a first aid kit and everything to make hot chocolate and marshmallows. So I believe Tabitha when she said nothing romantic happened. Now, some say this trouble was caused by Tabitha's vanity, but it was not. It was the feeling of a door closing. Tabitha suffered from a false dilemma fallacy and imposter syndrome. Tabitha was beautiful forever, but suddenly she realized she could no longer work as a model. And this was how she met people, how she had an income before she became a vampire. And now, not only was she a vampire, but she had this business to run with Mi Young. She suddenly worried that she wasn't a good enough fashion designer. And moreover, she worried about her partnership. She feared she might let Mi Young down, or maybe they would have a falling out. This is why Tabitha sought clarity. Humans, vampires, werewolves, we have all experienced this during our existence. And just to claim that it is vanity is not getting at the heart of the issue. A week later, Tabitha was back at work. She was drinking the blood of Agatha and drinking an enthralled human's blood under supervision since she wasn't quite sure of that yet. I thanked Derek for his assistance to my daughter, but he just shrugged and said, I told her well-made clothing makes people happy. And of course, he's right about that. So now, let's have a word from our sponsor. This history was brought to you by Photos Evermore, a proud subdivision of the Paperflower Consortium. Are you an initiate concerned that a creature of darkness is unable to reflect light and therefore unable to be caught on film and digital photography? Photos Evermore records your photograph for posterity, future documentation, and identification. We can even future-proof your social media with 100 glamorous selfie-style photographs, which we can Photoshop into future vacation, dog park, or dining pics. Affordable packages based on your need. Before you stop reflecting light forever, think photos evermore. Now it's time for questions. This question is from Initiate Fern. Lady Loretta, why have you told us several creation stories where the vampires suddenly realize what they've done? Are you trying to scare us away from transformation? No. Transformation is a personal choice. My goal is to only show how some experiences trip up young vampires. You must be ready to experience everything. The bloodlust, loss of reflection, the need for ambition and purpose, the need for change, the changing technology, especially now in this age. Seattle's population has exploded. Tabitha was able to accomplish getting on and off the mountain and remain unseen because the population. She was able to move through the rural areas into Tacoma, SeaTac, Federal Way, Tukwila, and then back home into Georgetown, which of course is part of Seattle, due to the lack of traffic in the area in 1971. That is why I warn you. Now, if you need to do something, you need to be aware that people are around, people may see you. And you have to be ready for that. If Tabitha went to the mountain now, she might have been seen. Or even she just might have gotten a parking ticket, or her car may have been towed, being left on the side of the highway. Though there are parts of King and Pierce County that are quite rural, we are not rural counties. We are a major metropolitan area. And that is why I warn you. Now, I'm going to keep this question anonymous because I don't want Tabitha to feel someone is judging her. But the question is this. Lady Loretta, there seems to be many side effects of becoming a vampire, but the loss of a reflection seems like a small one. How can this upset anyone? And my answer is this. There are many aspects of becoming a vampire that is different than when we are human. Even though all initiates are taught to do their grooming without a mirror, that does not prevent the shock of seeing oneself walk past a shop window without a reflection. That does not prepare you of taking your first selfie and realizing you're not in it. Any of these side effects which I've talked about can shock a vampire. Whether it's big or small, it doesn't matter. It matters to the person who is shocked. Be honest now. How often do you take a selfie? How often do you walk past a shop window and glance at your own reflection? Certain side effects will affect different people differently. It is not for us to judge. As I said in the first answer, the goal is to let you know that these things happen, and you must prepare for them. If you are lucky, your transformation from human to vampire will be an easy one. But there are no guarantees of which side effects will affect you and which won't. I can only tell you that these things happen. So that's all there is for tonight. Next time, we shall speak of the relationships between vampires and other species. Good night, beloved initiates, and sleep the sleep of the dead. If you have questions or comments for Lady Loretta, please contact her at info@paperflowerconsortium.com or through the Paperflower Consortium's Patreon. You can check out upcoming topics either there or on the website. If you love this podcast, like and share this episode. Please consider donating either one time or through the Patreon. The Paperflower Consortium podcast was written and performed by Elizabeth Gazzetti. You can learn more about her books, including the books which feature vampires in the same universe, by going to elizabethgazzetti.com. The amazing intro and outro music was written by Evan Witt, and you can learn more about his music at www.wittynotes.com. Thank you for listening.